I make a motion to come out of executive session.
I'll second that.
The motion has been made and seconded to return from executive session. Next thing on our agenda, I'm sorry, is there any objection? No objection. We are out of executive session. The next item is persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Madam Clerk, can you read the rules?
Yes, thank you. Public comment pertaining to education on non-agenda items is limited to 3 minutes per person per meeting. There will be up to 1 hour for persons to be heard. Public comment on agenda items will be taken at the time the item is considered. This is your opportunity to be heard, and the board will not respond to your comments. As per Board Policy 1312, individuals testifying may not discuss complaints against individual employees. Specifically, the guidelines are the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for the public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-age children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. And we have a maximum of 1 hour per meeting, and this is the first half hour. And there are, no one has signed up on the persons to be heard. So if there's anyone who wishes to come forward and speak, this is your time.
Wow, no one to speak on persons to be heard. All right, then we will move right on to borough and city reports. I see we have the city of Wasilla coming up. Oh, I'm sorry, city of Palmer.
Bert wanted to send me up first. We flipped. Sorry. We should have informed you, Madam President. City of Palmer, Doug Griffin, City Manager. Good evening. Just a few things, kind of some social events. I'm happy to recognize a good Palmer businessman, Mr. Cheesem, as your new school board member. Congratulations, Dave. Apropos to that, he's a member of the second Saturday. So it's something we're starting here to try to bring people downtown and come to some of our downtown businesses. So we are coming up on second Saturday of February. So that's scheduled for February 9th. There's information if you go about this further, if you go to the Palmer Museum and Visitor Center website. Just a bunch of businesses. They stay open till from 3 till 8 on Saturday. This evening event, where if the weather cooperates, we are looking at people purchasing paper, these paper lanterns, and as a fundraiser for a local businessman, Greg Gussie, who's having some health issues that we're trying to help him with. So we've got that. The City of Palmer has also begun its process of people nominating projects for capital improvement projects. The City of Palmer tends to have a pretty small locally funded capital improvements budget, but we do have a small budget for capital improvements. This primarily goes toward requests from the legislature, but you can go to the City of Palmer website. I have paper copies, but I don't really want to spread paper around. So just go to the City of Palmer website. You can download it, nominate a project. We'll start looking at it, costing it out. And then that builds to the project fair. This will be the second year we're going to host it at the MTA Event Center. It's scheduled for April 25th. Since there's a lot of time between now and then, you'll probably hear about this more, but we're going to get the word out early. That's a Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. talking about some of the projects that have been nominated, some of the ones that we hope to get funded by the legislature this session. We hope the session will be over by April 25th, if they stay to their schedule they're supposed to be. And last year we had all of our legislators in attendance, so it was a good thing for a good opportunity for the City of Palmer to thank them for their hard work on our behalf. So that's all I have this evening. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you.
Now, City of Wasilla.
Madam President, board members, I have just one thing tonight. On Monday of this week, I know the three Tri-City mayors, along with Mr. Stone and a borough representative, was at the F-16 discussion over at the fairgrounds. It was presented by Eielson Air Force Base. This is reference to moving the 21 F-16s out of Eielson down to J-Bear. I believe that was a good meeting. It only lasted an hour on their side as far as the presentation, but they're talking about relocating 545 of their personnel to the Anchorage, and it would include the Matsu area. A good example was given by one of the people who have already made the transition, saying that when him and his wife moved from the Eielson Air Force area down to Anchorage, that the price range they had on the house they were going to purchase had to go up $100,000 in order to purchase a house. The rules have changed in the recent years, and some of their personnel will be allowed to be this far from Eielson and still make the response time to get into Eielson, or I'm sorry, into J-Bear. So we will see an influx here in some proportion. I know we're going to track it, and I would assume that your people will track it also. The mayor and myself did travel to Eielson Air Force Base about 3-4 months ago, and I've already met with them once. And their timeline, if this was to go through, would be they would start in October of this year and be finished with the transfer by October 14. That was their timeline that they gave us on their fiscal year. Their fiscal year starts in October. So that was their timeline. So. But it was a good presentation by all three of the city mayors got up and made a speech and said, basically, if this is going to happen, we'll make the transition as smooth as possible for you to come down. So, anyway, any questions? Thank you.
Mr. Larson?
I forgot. Bert Collins, City of Wasilla. Sorry.
Okay. Okay, the next thing on our agenda is the superintendent update and student advisory report. Can we have Kendra go first on the student advisory report, please?
Today, Member Walton and Ms. Ripley from Matsu Health Foundation were in attendance at today's meeting. The week of February 20th and the 22nd will be Random Acts of Kindness Week. There will be posters, flyers, and announcements that will be dispersed within the schools this week. Our plans are progressing on and with some of the projects that we have been working on, such as our resolutions that are still under revision and will soon be put in front of the administration for input. Each meeting, we like to highlight on an area of growth, and today's meeting was on Parley Pro with a demonstration through Chex Mix. Wasilla Middle School is putting on a basketball camp for younger kids, and our next meeting is March 6th at Palmer Junior Middle School, starting at 9 a.m.
Thank you, Ms. McPhail. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President. As always, the two items on the superintendent update to keep you informed is the budget update as well as the bond project. Mr. Fulp is presenting the budget, and so we have a nice presentation for you that we'll also show on the video. And following that, we will we have Bob Bechtel here from the borough, and we'll simply be able to talk about the work that is out on the new schools out Kinnick Road, and just answer any questions. So we won't do a go through every single project, because as you know, there are quite a few. So, but he is present to be able to ask questions, and we'll also follow through with information in regard to the schools and the percent of completion on the design phases. If you have any questions in regard to what was published in the Board Connect. So without further ado, let's please begin with Mr. Luke Fulp. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Promo. What I'll be presenting tonight is, based on the budget calendar, is our open house presentations. This will be seen by the public next week as we go out to different school sites and reach out to the community and try to engage folks on the budget process and just answering any questions they may have and filling them in on district initiatives and goals. So this would be just the presentation, and a lot of it is informational items where we discuss the mechanisms that are in place to fund schools in Alaska. It's very much explaining definitions and discussion so that folks don't feel out of touch with the budget process just because of vocabulary and whatnot. So with that, I will peruse through this, and if the board has questions at any point, just please let me know, and we can talk about those then. But we will skim through certain slides and spend a little bit more time on others as the board sees fit. So the first item is just the budget process timeline. We, again, when we are out in the public and having these open house presentations, we want the public to know when it is during the next couple months that specific items will be addressed by either the assembly or the school board, when we'll find out funding from the state legislature. That's in there. And then the final two approvals that take place at the school board level before the budget's adopted. We want the public and any stakeholders that do attend these meetings to understand the chain of command, but also understand the structure where there's the seven-member school board, a superintendent and assistant superintendent of education, a chief business officer, and key administrators that are in charge of those critical function areas on the business side or those particular schools on the instruction side. So we've listed the schools there. And then just a general discussion as to where does the money come from. With the state's economy being as it is, with 90% of the state's revenue dependent on the oil industry and North Slope production, we want to just emphasize that so that folks understand where is the state foundation money coming from. And then so that accounts for, in this graph, you'll see 73% of our budget. The other major piece of our operating fund comes from local taxpayers through a local appropriation from the borough. That's 26%, and then we have an additional 1% of federal revenue. That really drives home the point that we're very much relying on the state for their funding and high oil prices and high production for making sure that we can fund our programs. And then this is just another graph of that information that we discussed earlier. So this is really what our projected revenue is for FY14 broken down. What drives the revenue for the school system is the enrollment projection. So when we go out to the public, we really want to focus on the enrollment projection and how do we achieve this enrollment projection and what is the analysis that goes on behind the scenes to come up with a projection, because the projection is due to the Department of Education by November 5th for the succeeding fiscal year. So that is very early, and we do have a pretty elaborate methodology. We have a cohort survival rate that is applied to each grade level for a particular year, and that's just based on the three-year historical for that particular grade level. We also take into account live birth rates and then any economic trends that may be happening could influence our projection. But for the most part, it is this cohort survival method. And we will be discussing both our enrollment history and forecast. Matsu Borough School District is the fastest growing district in the state. Even with stable enrollment from FY13 to FY14, we are projecting that we continue to see growth in FY15 and 16, as evidenced in this graph here. We are projecting 17,317 students for FY14. So we do have a little bit of a leveling off these past for the 3 years, FY12, 13, and 14, but then we are projecting growth beyond that. And that's just based on the cohort survival method and tracking the students as they make their way through our system. and how we've done historically as well, so actual enrollment versus projected and the accuracy of that, you can see that for the most part we are within acceptable variation as far as the percentage goes. That can be found at the bottom of this slide. The one year that we did have larger variance, we experienced larger growth than anticipated, and that was in FY08. So over the last several years, we want to just show how our track record with our projection methodology and how it's fared for us as a district. And then what do we do with charter schools? A lot of our stakeholders and parents are interested in the charter school, the policies that surround charter schools and the funding and how money gets to charter schools. So we want to show that we take the projections for enrollment from those charter schools, and we basically that's what we budget off of, and that if the enrollment for any particular charter school comes in above what they've projected, they receive additional money, and if they have fewer students they serve in a given year based on what they projected, we reduce their budget as well. So it's really what they see as the best number. You can see the larger variances, for example, for Birch Tree, that's a newer school, so it would be difficult for them to pinpoint exactly how many students are enrolling. They have had success. They are a fairly large charter school. Twinley Bridge also has larger variances with the homeschool program. It probably is a little bit more difficult to identify exactly how many students they may have from one year to the next. But for the most part, we don't see too large of variances there either. So those enrollment projections really do play a factor into the state foundation formula, which, again, is the majority of our funding. And we really just want to highlight the state foundation formula, the history of it, and the current situation that we are in with year-to-year funding from the state and what has been referred to by the governor and others as pay-as-you-go. And so, and pay-as-you-go is really just each year the session is at each year the legislature is in session, they make an appropriation, and that is for the succeeding fiscal year, and that's what we get. And so there's no multi-year plan in place to fund school systems like there was in 2009, 10, 11. And so we've have a slide here that shows House Bill 273, which was enacted in 2008. It was that multi-year funding plan that we refer to quite often. It took effect in FY09, and you can see that it included three main components. The first was that within the foundation formula, it addressed the district cost factor. And the district cost factor is also referred to as the area cost differential. And it was conducted by the Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA. So that is why it's also referred to as ICER. So it has really three names: ICER, District Cost Factor, and Area Cost Differential. They all mean the same thing. And it's the acknowledgement that it costs more to do business outside of Anchorage. As the economic and business hub of Alaska, that is the base. It's 1.0 for Anchorage. And outside of that, this study really wanted to determine what's the cost of living outside of Anchorage, what does it take to pay to recruit and retain teachers in other school districts of the same caliber as Anchorage is. And so this was a contentious study because it split urban versus rural. And in 2008, when they fully implemented it, they phased it in, and for much of the state, as we'll get to, it was a big win for them within the foundation formula. It meant it was a large factor that got built into the foundation formula. For us, our full implementation of ICER is 7% over Anchorage. So it's not a huge factor, but it does help MATSU as well, and I will identify those costs as well. The intensive multiplier at that time also had a lot of attention, in that there was plenty of testimony from school districts saying that it was very costly to serve these students and that they were being underfunded at the time. So that was looked at and addressed within this multi-year plan as well. And then finally, the base student allocation, the most popular factor, the most commonly referred to factor within the foundation formula, that was addressed as well. The base student allocation is the BSA. It is the number that the adjusted average daily membership, which is the product of the foundation formula, is multiplied by in order to get basic need. So we'll discuss that and go through just several of the steps, ADM to adjusted ADM. And I will just define ADM as well. At this point, ADM, as many of you have heard, is average daily membership. Adjusted ADM, also referred to as AADM. Really, you go through six steps to get from ADM to adjusted ADM. ADM is what we have after the student October student count. And the ADM is we are tracking enrollment over that 20 days. So rather than attendance, we are looking at that student being enrolled. They could be absent, but they're still enrolled in our school systems. And so even if no matter how many days they're absent, if they are enrolled for that 20 days, they count as 1.0 FTE. And so that's the difference there. And so ADM is what we look at. And so the first step is school size adjustment. And I built these slides for folks who are not numbers people, so they could understand our budget. So bear with me if it seems a little too elementary, but this is how we move through the foundation formula. The first one is the school size adjustment. We take a student at a small school, and the adjusted ADM for that student is larger, okay? We take that same student and say they attend a larger school, such as Wasilla High School, and the adjusted ADM for that student is a smaller number. Okay, and this really just takes into account the economies of scale that can be achieved when you're serving many students under one schoolhouse roof, with the cost of administrative overhead, the cost of utilities, as you know, everything that you can think of, nutrition services. You achieve an economies of scale when you're serving more students, and that's acknowledged and represented within the foundation formula under the school size adjustment factor. So that is the first factor. That also, you know, when we talk about whether or not our enrollment numbers have come in where we anticipated, we also do take a look at where did those students arrive, what schools are they at, because this does play into how much funding we get when they leave our smaller schools and enroll in our larger schools and our student population shifts in the valley. It also impacts our projected total revenue, and so that's why we discuss that a lot in the fall as well. So the next factor is the district cost factor, area cost differential, or ICER, as we refer to the three common names for it. And you can see within this chart represented by the dollar sign is the cost of doing business outside of Alaska. And these dollar signs are representative of the factor that's been applied to school districts. For instance, on the North Slope, you can see they have a very large dollar sign. Their area cost differential is fairly large, one of the largest in the states. You can see that down in the southeast, they have a larger dollar sign than even Anchorage. While they are closer to Seattle, they have found, at least in this study, that the cost of doing business is slightly higher there for whatever reason, utilities. And they look at market basket items, so it would be similar to looking at a CPI study where they look at what does it cost for basic needs in those areas. Out in the Lucians Eastboro, you can see very large cost factor, but we, being very close to Anchorage, have more or less close to the base for this factor. Special needs factor. The special needs factor is a 20% block grant that's built in directly after the area cost differential, and it really funds, and it was intended to fund, these four programs: vocational education, bilingual education, special education, and gifted talented. So the 20% block grant, while it does not fund all of these programs and provide enough funding for all of these programs that the district invests in, it is meant to, and the intent is for this 20% block grant to go to these programs. And so that's 20% after the area cost differential. It just adds, again, to that adjusted ADM. We are now just adding and multiplying off of that adjusted ADM. We have not involved dollars yet. And so the vocational education, this is part of the legislature's their effort to tie funds and appropriations to concrete items that they know that they can get a good return on investment for and things that they feel that Alaska students need. CTE has been one of those items. And so they've introduced a new factor within the foundation formula over the last couple years, and it's 1.5% increase. And so that comes directly after the special needs factor. Just an additional increase set aside for vocational education. Yes.
Now, the vocational education factor, is vocational education money reduced from the first from the foundation for me, you had the first four parts of that.
Mm-hmm.
Since vocational education gets money a second time, do they lose money the first time? Or does that go into the general fund to be dispersed to whoever?
Dr. Perlman, would you like to answer that?
I'll just let you know that we actually spend more money on vocational ed than it is in the block grant. So more operational monies go towards all four of those because it costs money. So, it's not displacing money. We actually added programs in MATSU, and, in fact, for special education, what were the others, title, all those four factors, we actually spend more money out of the operational fund. It really is one fund. They're just saying it's an acknowledgement that these programs cost more. So it's not follow the student. It's we understand in a district it's going to cost more to have smaller class sizes with some of those programs.
And, just to add to that, I would have to say from my experience of working at other school districts around the state, MATSU really has something to tout when it comes to CTE. Having CTHS, an entire high school dedicated to voc ed and career and technical education, other than AVTEC, I mean, this is really the program that's housed in the district. And so you obviously, MATSU is funding and supporting career and technical education far above what's being provided through the foundation formula. So it's a very good thing. As far as the intensive needs funding, the recognition of one, every single intensive needs students that is identified as having these needs and having an individualized education plan. These students, their plans are audited by the Department of Education. But again, as we talked about, the services provided are very costly, and so every single student that's identified is 13 students are adjusted and added to the ADM to meet those needs. So this is the fifth factor within the foundation formula, and it's just added onto the adjusted ADM. For correspondence students, they come at the very end. So when we talked about beginning the formula with just the average daily membership, that was all of the students that attend our schools less any homeschool or correspondence students. They are factored into the formula at the very end. And the traditional homeschool model was that these students never arrived at our doors. They received services outside, and it was more just administrative paper pushing to make sure that their reimbursements were to them and that their parents were getting the supplies they needed. We have a much different model here at MATSU, where we have a facility, a school attached to this. So within the foundation formula, each student, each correspondent student is worth 0.8 FTE or 0.8 ADM. And so on this slide, I show 5 equals 4. And so there's not a full funding factor for correspondence per se. And part of the reason was there was never a facility attached to these students as far as operating costs and keeping the facility warm and lit and powered. But we actually do have that. So there has been a push as of late to try to recognize this as a full funding and get the funding we deserve for providing the services that we do at schools like MATSU Central. At this time, though, however, the correspondence factor is 0.8 FTE. Okay, so that is the foundation formula without using a lot of numbers. But when we get to the end of it, when we take that adjusted ADM and multiply it by that base student allocation number of 5,680, that is what is referred to by the state as basic need. That is what it takes to run and operate your school district. The states determined that through that foundation formula, they have effectively understood the total cost of running your school district, at least the operating portion of it. And so what makes up that operating portion is all of the factors that we discussed just now, and it's represented in a pie chart. So you can see most of the pie chart is just student enrollment. That student enrollment starts the ADM. By the end of the factor, we start with about 17,000 students. By the end of the factor, and when we get to adjusted average daily membership, we're looking at a number of 28,000 adjusted ADM. So student enrollment is a very large part of that. The school size factor is 7.73%. The district cost factor makes up about 4%. Special needs factor, you can see that that does make a difference in our budget. That's 13%. That's the 20% block grant. The voc ed funding factor is 1.19%, a smaller percentage of the whole with regards to basic need. And then the correspondence count is 5%, and the intensive needs is close to 15% for those intensive needs students. And then lastly, the quality schools grant, which is part of the foundation formula, is simply $16 for every adjusted ADM that we have. It's added on at the very end of the foundation formula. So that is really the components of the state foundation formula. We really want the public to be aware of that. We want to make sure that if there's a bill that discusses any one of these factors, that all of our stakeholders and decision makers, such as yourselves, understand the implications behind certain bills and how they're tied to the funding. Okay. This, again, we discussed how these steps work. This would just be a numbers recognition or demonstration or illustration of the numbers for the foundation formula and how we got from our projected enrollment to our determined estimated revenue. And so I will skip through these because we just discussed them, but they will be on the website, and they will be there for anyone who really wants to see the numbers as they move through our budget and how they make up the end piece. So those are step 1, 2, 3 we've already discussed, 4 and 5. And lastly, the sixth one, you can see that the average daily membership on this slide, with all the steps added in, we have that 28,731 in adjusted average daily membership. Again, that 28,731 is what is multiplied by the base student allocation to come up with basic need. Once we have basic need, we have to determine what is the minimum required contribution to fund school districts, because that the state says this is what it takes to operate your school system, this basic need number, but we're going to require that your local borough for any incorporated area pay a portion of that basic need to help support schools. So our basic need then is that 28,000 times 5,680. It's 163 million. That's what it's projected to be next fiscal year in FY14. 163 million for basic need. Of that basic need, the state foundation formula, there's two different ways of achieving that minimum required. Most school systems use the lesser of the two, which is they use the latter one. The tax base for the prior fiscal year, determined by the full tax value determination issued by the state, that is the number they use. Ours is $9.5 billion. Multiplied by 2.65 mils. Okay, so when we do that, our value for the minimum required is 25.3 million. And because we're using the lesser of the two, the reason why that first equation is in there as or formula is in there is because there are the state's trying to achieve equitability with how school districts are funded, and there are several school districts, while they're few and far between, they have a very large tax base for the number of students they serve. And those school districts would be the North Slope Borough, Valdez, and I believe the last one is Skagway. But they use the first formula or mechanism, where they take the prior year basic need times 45%. If they took the tax base, because they have so much oil infrastructure, times 2.65, they would have an astronomical number, and they would be receiving much more revenue than any of the school districts. And so it becomes an equitability thing, and this is the way the state caps this. There's more information on how we achieve the 2.65 mils, and it really was basically set on the Mat-Su Borough School District, because what it was prior to last year was 4 mils. Okay, so it was 4 mils, but it only took into account growth, half of the growth since 1999. So the state said, as boroughs and local municipalities were growing, They said, we're going to provide some relief to boroughs and the local appropriation. So we will only take half of the growth after 1999 and put it towards your district or borough for that four mills calculation. So what we had was we had 10 years of growth where boroughs were more or less not having to pay that full four mills on their tax value. Well, as we well know, the borough that grew the most over those 4 years, or over, I'm sorry, over those that 10-year, 12-year span, was the Mat-Su borough. And what the effective rate that was set last year for all school districts was 2.65 mills. So they ratcheted it down to the lowest effective rate that was paid, and that rate was actually Mat-Su's rate. So Mat-Su was paying the lowest mill rate on their tax value, and so it was a kind of a hold harmless. Like every school district now is at 2.65 because they had to reset it. But the difference now is for year-to-year growth in the tax base, all of the boroughs around the state will have to pay 2.65 on it, and there will be no relief for year-to-year growth in the tax base. So in essence, each year that we move forward, that floor will move up at a higher rate, more or less. So this is the floor for the minimum required contribution. It's complicated. If you have questions on it, we can discuss it ad nauseum, but I'll just run through these quickly here. So you basically, what you do is you take the basic need less the minimum required, and you get the what is referred to as state aid. We have it up here as net basic need. $37.8 million will be the portion the state pays. The borough will be required to pay $25 million. The nice thing about the Mat-Su borough is they see this minimum required, and they fund about twice that amount. They fund us at $50 million per year. So while this is the floor, and the floor will be increasing at a higher rate, it won't necessarily impact anything here, at least in the immediate future, being that we're funded at twice the minimum required. Okay, and then the last thing would just be this quality schools money and how it's tacked on, and you can see how that factors in as well. There's a lot to say here. The state foundation formula also has a ceiling for local contributions, and so it's the greater of these two. And so there's a formula for this. It's either 2 mills on the total assessed valuation, or your prior year basic need times 23%. And so again, this is just a way to have a ceiling so that some municipalities are not funding way over others, and that there's some equitability among all of the funding for schools and what students receive through the public education system. We utilize the prior year basic need times 23%. That generates about $38 million. If you add the minimum and the additional allowable together, you get $63.4 million as the total amount that the borough could fund us. Okay, they cannot fund us more than that number, and they fund us at $50 million, so they're about $13 million below that. Did you have a question? Okay. Okay, it's later on. We have more information to come here, so just hold tight, and we'll get to that. The next thing is we just wanted to provide an analysis of local contribution, show folks what's been the history behind the borough and their funding level, as well as the state. So this chart is just a representation of the state funding since FY06. And the trajectory of that funding, as well as the borough's funding and their funding level. So this is total appropriation over that time, and a trend line that goes along with that. You can see that the state has kicked in much more funding in recent years, and you can see beginning in FY09, it did have a pretty steep incline. That was in large part because of House Bill 273, where they had those factors increased and phased in over those years. This graph shows the maximum allowable local contribution, the actual contribution in navy, and then the minimum required in gray. So the red is the maximum, the middle bar is the actual, and then the gray bar would be that minimum or floor. So you have the floor and ceiling, and the local contribution we receive is somewhere in between there. And you can see for FY14, again, we're looking at about twice the amount of the minimum of $51 million there. This chart just shows the history percent increase over. Member Larson, do you have a question?
How does the borough figure what their contribution is going to be?
Through the president, basically they it fits within their budget, but I want you to know that last year they funded us what we asked. And so here on this slide you'll see that if you go back, well, between Anchorage, it's actually a later one, but what we request is that our goal, until we are requesting 3% a year increase until our portion falls between Fairbanks and Anchorage. And Anchorage is in green and Fairbanks is in red. And what you're looking at is per pupil. So if you look, Juneau is in purple and they have about 4,500 students. So if you took their contribution from the city, it's about $8,000 a child. Although the money might be less per child, it's quite more. So our goal and what we request from the borough is a 3% increase a year until that blue line gets between Fairbanks and Anchorage. And we'd like it there because we are our population. We fall between those two. So of the five large school districts, our per pupil funding is the smallest. We did just ask at the borough for 3% last year, and they gave it to us. They already know we're going to ask for 3% again because we presented that last year, and we are just asking for that 3% increment to stay in between those. They did make cuts at the borough to fund the district at 3% is what my understanding was. So.
They didn't increase their mill rate, in other words.
They did not.
Okay, but we're going to ask 3%, but they know what they're getting back for their dollar, I assume, too. Right?
Absolutely. I think the whole state does at this point. We've been pushing that line. So, and they are very supportive. I've found support from individual members as well as the mayor. It comes down to their finances as well, but I think the trust factor is positive there.
And along those lines, through the president, I'll just continue on here. Along those lines, we are engaged, as Dr. Promo mentioned, in trying to establish some sort of funding plan. Again, the goal is to be that midpoint between per pupil funding between Fairbanks and Anchorage. You can see that the percent increase from year to year in funding, both per pupil and total appropriation, has been somewhat erratic over the last since FY06. At last several years. And so one of the recommendations is that the borough establish a more consistent funding pattern. And this, again, when we talk in terms of our budgeting policy, our fiscal policy here at the school district, and being able to make sure that our programs are sustainable and that we're making sound fiscal decisions, we need to, with year-to-year funding, we need to know, at least have some certainty behind where our revenue is coming. Can we rely on it, and to what extent can we rely on it as we move forward with different initiatives? But this would just be an example of how we haven't necessarily seen a funding pattern in the past, and we're trying to establish that with the borough now. This is also an interesting chart. This is the full tax value determination for the Matsu borough, and you can, of course, see how that has increased at a very high pace over the last 10 years. And that is represented in the blue. Meanwhile, I want to divert your attention to the orange line, which represents the Matsu borough per student funding. So that is based on their appropriation and the number of students we're serving in that particular year. That's their per pupil funding level. So while their total appropriation may have been going up in terms of the total dollar, we are also serving many more students over this time span. We had an increase of almost 4,000 in ADM, again, the fastest growing district in the state. So we really want to focus on the per pupil number whenever we can. plan because we feel that gives a more accurate reflection of the number of students we're serving and really the revenue we should be receiving for each of those children. This is the slide that we just spent some time on. Of course, we're always going to use some of these other school districts as a measuring stick when we look to be the best school district in the state and move forward with our initiatives that aren't done anywhere else. We do need to have funding that outpaces them or at least is commensurate with other school districts. So again, this is the historical per pupil funding comparison. The fund balance analysis, this is another hot topic and a board priority this session, but this highlights the fund balance issue and the lapse to the borough. So you can see on this chart, the lapse to the borough is in red for each of these fiscal years. The unassigned is the light blue and the committed non-spendable is the black portion. So we are engaged in discussions with the borough. I know Dr. Promo has been meeting with the mayor and folks over there and just letting them know that this is a board priority. And I also provided testimony on a House bill in which it would restrict any local ordinances with regards to limiting the fund balance a school district could hold in reserve. So this is something, again, when we talk about year-to-year funding and what we need to have in terms of tools to manage our budget, our $220 million budget, what do we need to make sure that we can make up for funding shortfalls or unexpected spikes in health insurance, snow removal, energy costs? We need a fund balance to be able to rely upon so it doesn't impact the classroom. And
Member Larson?
Yeah, to the chairman. Now, the money that over that chart that was given back to the borough went into the school site selection committee pot of money. Is that correct? That's where it is? And in theory, each time a site is bought, the bond money will go back into that. That money, in theory, will always be there. Is that correct? That set amount of money that's in the borough.
Through the president, Member Larson, it is in the school site acquisition, and I thought it was a fund, a school site acquisition fund, but it actually resides in their general fund as simply a reserve within their general fund. So it's school site acquisition within the general fund. That's more technical terms and really things that an auditor would be concerned with. But I believe the intent is to just have a reserve to be able to purchase the land and not have to have it reimbursed by the bond. So I'm not so sure that the bond is reimbursing the land purchase.
But usually when we bond for a school, we consider X amount of dollars go to the property also. Is that correct?
Through the president, I'm being told through Dr. Promo that it is correct, and that's what we've been doing.
On these most recent bonds we have, but the original, my understanding of the original impetus to have that fund was to charge taxpayers less, and so therefore you wouldn't use those monies because you wouldn't, you're kind of having a savings plan so that you wouldn't tax money that you could just buy land. So my understanding is that so far no money has been placed back in, but then again, we haven't had these school bonds. They're currently in process.
Just one quick thing on the Iditarod property that we purchased. That was in the bond, but they utilized the school site selection committee money. I assume that money from that bond will go back into that. So it's a fund that will never go away is what I'm getting at.
We'll have to wait and see.
Through the president, I will look into that, the utilization of the reserve for school site acquisition, and just check to see what's going on as far as the activity. It should be, because it's not its own fund, it may be a little bit more difficult to track, but that's definitely information we can request from the borough.
One last thing. The point I'm getting at is if this fund is never going to go away, this fund, the way it was sold to me, of course, not the reality that you're pointing out, but the way it was sold to me over the last 3 or 4 years is it's a fund that once you sell the bonds, you buy the property, you sell the bonds, that money goes back into that fund. And the reason I'm trying to emphasize this is then they, in fact, don't need this additional money at the end of the year because you have a fund balance of $5 million or $4 million sitting there for that specific reason to purchase property that will, you know, refill itself. So there's no reason for them to say, split the pot again because they have a pot there. And that's what I was getting at. Thank you.
They've also used the money for other worthy causes, such as that they've expended money out of that fund for Sioux Valley when it burned down to match the difference between the building of the new building and what they received in insurance, as well as purchase the land for Academy Charter. And so there have been the connected land between here and Academy Charter for egress. So there's other reasons, and but that they have been for the function of school district and students.
So they have a reserve that they could fall back on, but we don't have a reserve we can fall back on. I get it. Okay, thank you.
We have another question.
Member Rutherford. It's my understanding it's 50% that's lapsed back to the borough, right? So on this graph, how can I, since that number lapsed to the borough isn't 50% of any other number there, how could I make that connection? I'm trying to figure out if I could look at this.
Through the president, that's a great question, Member Rutherford. It's a 50% of the increase in unassigned. So you're seeing in the light blue a cumulative total.
Okay.
And it would just be 50% of the increase for that fiscal year.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on, we also have not to beat a dead horse, but the fund balance recommended versus actual. You can see here that the GFOA, the Government Finance Officers Association, recommends that government entities hold 2 months of operating costs in reserve as a best practice. And this is a recommendation from their association that this be followed. You can see for us that amounts to over $30 million. Currently, we're at $1.7 million. Something in the middle there is the Alaska maximum allowable, what the state of Alaska allow school districts to hold in reserves in their unassigned or unreserved portion is 10% of your total operating costs. That number is $19 million. The point here is we're not close to either of these numbers. We really don't have a substantial reserve, and for the size of our budget, you can see that the recommended amounts are far exceeding what we have in our reserve. Okay, moving on to the projection. The projection we're going to discuss with our stakeholders as we go out to these different school sites and just talk to them about all the many assumptions that go into our projection, not only on the revenue side because of the uncertainty with regards to the funding appropriation at the state and local levels, but also on the expense side of the budget and what are some of those assumptions that we had to build in. So you can see that we are at the top there. We say borough funding increases by 3%. Local revenue increases from 25 to 200,000. That's just a historical number that we've used and facility use and that those items. But as far as salaries go, which is our largest expense, we're projecting that there's no cost of living increase added to the salary schedule. That's part of our projection. The salaries will increase based on movement within the salary schedule. So any step movement or column movement within the salary schedules is accounted for with a 2.5% increase. We've, again, reviewed this number with our Director of Human Resources and Payroll, Ms. Katie Gardner. We've actually drafted it out and looked at the movement through all of the columns. So we feel good about that number. And then these are all just going on and listing the many more assumptions that are built into it. We talked about this last meeting. I just want to reiterate because it is a technical point. But when we talk about total benefits increasing by 5.16%, a large driver behind that total overall percentage increase is the 6% from health insurance. And again, I believe it was Member Larson that pointed out at the last board meeting, that 6% for us, the total increase that we're looking at for for health insurance is really trend, national and statewide trend of 12%, and we're splitting the difference. That's what our negotiated agreement is set up to do currently, is split the increase in health insurance premiums. So we would split it 50-50. We would take on 6%. The employees would take on 6%. We then, in our budget, account for 6%.
Madam President?
Yes, Mr. Cordero?
Through the chair, my understanding was, I think in the previous year, that the assumption would be that an increase in the premium would be 13 all the way to even 19%, and then once we knew that the health insurance cost was going to increase by zero, that of course helped tremendously, but do we have an idea of what that's actually going to be, or are we just assuming based on national data but not on actual local data that we received from the sources of the actual trust or self-trust?
Through the President, Member Cordero, I believe I understood your question in that last year we did not experience an increase in health insurance. We had a 0% renewal through the NEA Trust. And the question is, are we looking at any information with regards to the NEA Trust, or are we just following what we know in terms of what's happening within the industry and trend for health insurance? And we have not had any discussions with NEA Trust about what their plan on doing with their premium renewal and if they will come out with another 0% increase. At this point, what we're utilizing is what we know in terms of what's happening with health insurance costs and some sort of reasonable number for that.
Thank you.
Again, we're just going to continue on with a couple of the assumptions. Utilities, we're assuming a 10% increase. It's really important that when we talk about utilities and some of the markets are very volatile, and when we don't have a fund balance to rely on, we do account for some sort of increase and budget that in as a buffer. The district is also budgeting a $1.5 million subsidy to the pupil transportation fund. The reason why that is in our list of assumptions for our general operating budget is because anytime there's a shortfall in a special revenue fund or any other fund that's more or less supported by the general operating budget, we are required to book a transfer from the operating budget to that fund to make sure that it is solvent, that it is balanced, and that's just fund accounting 101 there. But that is a requirement, and we have to budget that in the general fund. So no subsidy to food service in the past, and as our auditor pointed out in the January meeting, we had had historically subsidies to the food service fund, and we are not projecting that we'll have one this year, nor are we projecting that we will have one next year. So, and then the state legislative grants are just some of the items that we are lobbying for and requesting additional funding for those startup costs and making sure that we can keep those programs around for next year and the year after. The general fund revenue, this is a breakdown. FY13 is on your left-hand side, FY14 on the right-hand side. Not much change, but we do want to highlight just any difference so that you can see it year to year, what we're assuming in terms of changes in revenue. Likewise, we're also highlighting FY13 expenses in major categories and FY14, what that will look like in terms of the values and the percent of the total. The other item that we will be at least going out and making sure folks are well aware of is our use of ratios and metrics as an internal tool to make sure that we're distributing funds to our school sites in an equitable fashion. The ratios refers to a staffing formula, more or less, and the metrics is how we allocate our discretionary costs among our school sites. And so that you can see here, this is the historical. We are attempting to keep the same ratios and metrics that we had in place for FY13 in place for FY14. To that end, We did a quick graph to show you what it takes to really increase the pupil-teacher ratio. And so you can see that if we add 12.25 teachers to the system, it reduces the class size, overall class size, and of course these are aggregate numbers and a calculation. It reduces the average class size by 0.5 in the PTR. And then you can just follow that up. It's just a straight relationship there. The next one is 20. It takes 24.75 FTE in teachers to reduce the class size by 1.0. So you can see that these aren't easy changes to make, and that keeping the class size PTR intact is it does cost money when we talk about salaries increasing from year to year and benefits increasing from year to year. To make sure that we're maintaining those class size ratios, it does take effort and funds. So the forecast, a long-term forecast, again, anytime you're looking at projecting even further, you're going to have more assumptions. So I'm not going to go through this list, but we have identified these. Again, these will be on the website, and during our open house, we'll be able to answer any questions that folks have with regards to the long-term forecast and the assumptions that we've made. But more or less, again, it follows our forecast for FY14 in that there's no cost of living increase on the salary schedule, but we still maintain a movement and column movement, and that is a cost that we will be incurring. So very similar to our FY14 forecast, but we are going to project this out further. And you can see that with this, we have for FY14, we have that $5.9 million deficit that we referred to last meeting, but that it grows over time, and that's what Mr. Forrest refers to as a structural deficit. And it is structural in that our costs and our operating expenses are outpacing our revenue, the money that we're bringing in. And so that is a structural issue. We have to address it, and we're well aware of it, in order to do so, we do need to make sure that we're either cutting costs or that we're receiving additional revenue. So that's the projection. That's the presentation that we'll be giving next week. I'm happy to entertain any questions the board may have at this time.
Member Welton.
You mentioned the transportation. What is our situation with that right now, and what would happen if they do not, if the legislature does not fund it?
Currently, there's not a bill that's been presented or filed for transportation funding or the recalibration of it. But basically what happened is last session, the built-in increase for that bill was 1.5% for FY14 and 15 for the cost increases in transportation alone. What was kind of the caveat to that, and maybe not looked at and addressed at that time when this bill was entertained and passed at the end of the session, was that all of the school district's contracts with First Student, which First Student provides services for all but Anchorage in terms of the school systems, and let me rephrase that. I believe Sitka also has a local contractor. So it's not, and we have two other local contractors for school buses. But the large provider is First Student. All of their contracts are tied to this Anchorage CPIU for year-to-year increases. And so that the last 5 years, the Anchorage CPI has increased by about 2.6%. And what's been built into the funding for pupil transportation is 1.5%. So we have it seems like a small number, but it does make a difference when we look at the total cost and the money coming in to fund that program. So,
and just through the president, we are working on that with our lobbyists now, and it would end it this year because then all the majority of districts in the state would then be able to renegotiate perhaps at the state level to be able to control some of those costs. And I believe it's a little over $1 million, $1.2
million. Madam President?
Member Cordero?
Yeah, just to follow up on that, it is my understanding that there will be some efforts to try to correct and introduce some legislation to correct that percentage. The Senate version that came out last year in the per pupil transportation was correct, But then the House version, once they approved it, they had reduced the percentage, and that's what we're looking at right now. But I believe there are some efforts by some of the legislators to try to fix that. So something, I think something will be introduced.
Thank you, Mr. Cordero. Member Lacey.
Yes, thank you, through the President. As I was getting my computer ready for this meeting, I came across something about the Sioux Valley wood boiler system. How is that going to affect this budget and the next two or three budgets? Specifically, I have some questions about that. who's paying for the whole boiler system? You don't have to tell me this now. How much money is the district on the hook for this whole process? Does a new building need to be built to house that boiler because the maintenance room is too small or the mechanical room is too small? And is the process for bidding for the who's going to supply the wood, and is that going to be a competitive bid process? And where did the money come from? I like alternative energy, but I'm concerned this is going to be our version of the Susitna, and I'm kind of scared about that personally. So,
Member Lacey, Dr. Parama has told me we do have answers to these questions. They will get it in a form that all of us can go through in Board Connect or Reading Packet.
But just for to rest assured that we were not completing this project unless it was cost neutral. And so at this point, we have not moved forward because we did receive word that the wood heating system would not be able to heat the water hot enough because it has to be too far away from the building. And so it is on hold, and the borough is recalibrating and reworking it. But we did not enter into this venture without that statement of cost neutrality.
Member Larson.
Now, utilities are going up 10%, but is the energy grant still going to be there, and is that energy grant growing by a certain percent to help cover some of those costs?
Through the President, Member Larson, the energy money, one-time energy money that was in place for the current year is in the governor's proposed budget or the governor's budget for FY14. However, there is no increase for that energy relief. So we received about 20, $2.8 million in the current fiscal year, and it's $2.8 million for FY14 as well. Thank you, Dr. Promo.
So with the constant increase of the non-employee benefits and salary, that's part of your 5% deficit. But the state doesn't take any consideration at all inflation. Is that correct? When they put their student allocation out, it's just, I've noticed it's been flat for 3 years. So any increase and cost of living is not taken into consideration on our non-employee areas, either commodities and that kind of thing, boiler parts, you know.
Through the President, Member Larson, I would have to fully agree with you on this item because I believe the proper item or factor within the foundation formula to account for inflation is the base student allocation. When I went through the foundation formula, you saw that all of those other factors accounted for something else. They accounted for the size of the school, intensive need services, special programs. The only factor that really is there for inflation and to account for inflationary pressures is to change that base student allocation at the very end of the formula. And as you mentioned, it has been flat for some time now, the past 3 years.
Yeah, you would think that would be put in there. It would be a small amount. It wouldn't be a huge amount, but it would take care of the utility increase and the commodity increase from year to year to year, I would imagine. Is that something that we're going to look at, maybe to take down the Juno, just to, for that increase for, for cost of living and I'm not talking about cost of living for our employees. We're just talking of commodities and gas and stuff like that.
Member Larson, if you remember when we did our legislative priorities, an addition to the base student allocation was our top legislative priority. And when I make my my presentation on just being in Juneau, I'll cover that. Yes, that was one of our legislative priorities.
Yeah, but I'd like to see it put into the base allocated. I mean, annually, you know, whatever the percent of Anchorage is, and you know how they figure that out.
That was in our legislative priorities.
Thank you.
That's it.
Member Rutherford.
I want to compliment the graphics in this. I think they're great. And I've been to these community budget presentations, you know, as a community member out in the schools before, and I think they're, you know, they're fairly well attended and they're great. The thing that I run into now going around to schools is, you know, even the teach, because it is very complicated, even the teachers, even our own staff are confused. And I'm wondering if something like this is presented to the principals, maybe tweaked a little, and then are they given some sort of train-the-trainer advice on how to pass it on to their staff?
Through the president, yes and yes. Okay. They were trained today. They're trained every year. They're given the presentation to redo, or we will go out to their schools. And so absolutely, because the best information that we can give and the best PR is those in our hands when we understand funding and where it goes and who does it. And, you know, it's not magical. Our board doesn't, under this desk here, have a bunch of money piles. So we try to do that because information is powerful, and we hope that our parents, students, staff, including principals and every staff member, understands this.
Just one last comment if I may. I appreciate this being on the on our website, totally transparent, so anybody can go to it. Any teacher, any citizen, any employee of the district can go to it and look at it. And it's in a good enough form that, that people can understand it, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Are there any more questions? Thank you, Mr. Fulp.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. Perlmo.
Thank you for bearing with us on that long report. At this point in time, if you have any questions in regard to the bond project update, we promised that we would always have our specialists from the borough here. You did receive information in regard to the 65%, if you will, on Matsu Day School, and we're working on that on Sioux Valley as well. The board will vote again on the two designs at 95% according to ordinance and policy. But at this time, Mr. Bechtel is here with Mr. Fulp to answer any particular questions that you might have in regard to probably maybe the West, you know, the Kinnick, anything you'd like to answer, and they can give you a brief overview. And I'll stress brief just because I know we spent a lot of time on the budget.
Do you have a presentation, or would you just like to ask questions? Any questions? Wow, Mr. Bechtel, this is the first time we haven't had questions. I was down in Juneau and spoke with our legislators. Many of them were concerned about when the football fields are going in and if they will be appropriately drained. Can you give us some information on that?
Madam President, that depends. Is it a running team or a passing team? No. They will be appropriately drained as soon as the weather allows the work to be completed. And we should have four high school fields turf this by the end of this summer. So looking forward to making those happen. Right now they're in design, as are many of the other projects on the bond schedule. You should see next month, as Superintendent Primo said, that we should see both the day school and the pathway school designs here for 95% design review.
Member Welton.
Thank you. When I was reading the update, I was confused because I thought Pathway School did not want lockers. Now they're wanting lockers. Is that what has happened to space issues and changing some of the design?
Through the president, yes. Member Welton, they now want lockers, yes. little late in the design to be doing that, but it's okay. And we have a good design team on that with McCool, Carson Green, and they've done many of our other schools. So each day I ask the question of myself, if the school district could select anyone to do their design and construction project as far as managing them, would they select me? And I ask myself that, and that's why I put in a great effort. So I'm hoping that everybody does that, that I work with.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bechtel. Yes. Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute.
And as the last part of my superintendent update, if I could please call forward Mr. Ken Forrest to the podium.
I'm assuring him it's not bad. Mr. Forrest will be leaving us at the end of this month. We're all very sad to go. So what I'm going to do is read a little bit that the staff put together about Mr. Ken Forrest. Mr. Ken Forrest was not looking for a job when he agreed to become a member of the administration team here. In fact, he was pushed, cajoled, begged to leave his job, house, and even his wife in California. Fortunately for us, Ken was not able to withstand the pressure and agreed to come to Alaska to work for the MATSU. Since July of 2010, Ken has dedicated himself to the students and staff of the MATSU Borough School District, as well as the community of MATSU, occasionally flying back to California to visit his wife. From day one, it was clear Ken Forrest came to the MATSU ready to work as he developed his to-do list. No job proved to be too big or too small for Ken, as his day-to-day work ranged from developing the district's multi-million dollar budget to meeting the needs of all 17,500 students to shoveling the walkway at the central office so visitors could safely enter the building. Ken Forrest knows customer service goes a long way. Some of his major accomplishments include spearheading the largest ever single district bond in the state of Alaska, work to get more technology into school with wireless and fiber. He implemented upgrades to many MATSU Borough School District business systems, including paperless technology and direct deposit for all employees. He obtained motor coaches and warm buses for students to be transported comfortably. And I rode on one of those to Copper Center, and I didn't get cold once. Thank you so much. Implementing school cash online to make life a whole lot easier for parents. And if you haven't used that, you ought to try it. It's nice. Making all schools welcoming on the inside and out with fresh paint and other capital improvements. Ken, you are leaving the MATSU better than when you came, and for that we thank you.
Although Ken is selling and doesn't really want to bring back a lot of things from Alaska, he's a man of few material things. We couldn't let him leave Alaska without a gold pan. So he'll have lots to talk about in California.
Thank you, Ken.
Very nice. Thank you.
Okay, we're moving on to the consent agenda. Can I have someone bring that forward?
I would like to move the consent agenda, the minutes of January 16th, 2013, the minutes of January 22nd, 2013, the 13-055 recommendation for certified new hires, and item D, 13-058 policies reviewed by the policy committee.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any comments? Any items to pull? All right. With that, we'll go through the vote. Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheeseman?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Cordero? I believe Member Cordero?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. That has been moved. The next item on our agenda are action items.
I'd like to move action item A, 13-051, Mat-Su Central School Course Approval, Rural Fine Arts and Digital Publishing.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded. Do we have anybody from the public who would like to make comment on this item? Is there any discussion from the board? Member Lacey.
I would just like to give everybody a report because I'm on this committee. These two classes, the one is the World Fine Arts. That is a music program. The second program is a digital publishing. The class is designed to teach students the pitfalls of publishing things online. And I would like to point out that these classes have gone through the Academic Advisory Council of Mat-Su Central School. They also have a new rubric, I guess it would be, for bringing these classes to us. And I guess years past, these classes were just willy-nilly brought and approved. Well, these have been vetted by quite a few different people now. So that's what I want to say.
Okay, are there any more comments? All right, so we will move on to vote. Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Cheeseman.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Cordero.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
And I too vote yes, so this is moved and approved. On to the next item.
I'd like to move 13-056, student readmission case, E12-004.
Second.
This item has been moved and seconded. We do not take public comment, nor do we discuss these cases, so I'll move right on to the voting. A vote yes would be to readmit. Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Cheeseman?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Can you hear me? Yes.
And I too vote yes. So this is also moved along with the student readmission. Item C.
I'd like to move 13-057, school board committees.
Second.
All right, so it's been moved and seconded. Is there any public comment? All right, so let's talk about it. We have two committees that are with the borough. These are two committees that when we put forward members to go on these committees, they are approved by the mayor and then sent before the borough assembly. So the two committees are the site selection committee. We did have member Gaddis on the site selection committee, and since she is leaving, we are going to open it up for people who might want to sit on this committee with the approval of the borough mayor. Is anyone interested in this committee? Member Larson?
You're talking about school site selection committee?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you.
Member Cheeseman?
Yes, I have served on that before in another capacity, and I, depending on when they meet, I think I could do it again if the board is interested.
Okay, I know that their agenda is set, and they meet at different times. There's no real set
right
time, so it's kind of up in the air.
Okay.
All right. Are you still interested?
I'm
then
still interested.
All right. Is anybody else interested? We can appoint two members to that. Member Rutherford?
Well, I was just going to say that I would be available and interested
in both the site selection committee and the joint committee, really whichever place I could be more used or has fewer people interested. Either one would work with my schedule, and I'd be interested.
Okay. So it looks like we have two people who are interested in the Borough Site Selection Committee. Member Welton.
I would be interested in being the alternate on that, if it's acceptable. I feel a conflict of interest on the Kinnick Elementary piece of property, and so I would not be available to vote on that. So I would be happy to be the alternate.
Okay, we do have the site for the high school, middle school purchased, and we are considering, or from last I understood, considering an other site out there. So with no objection, we will forward Ms. Rutherford, Mr. Cheeseman for that site selection with Welton as an alternate. All right. So then we come back to the Joint Borough Assembly and School District Board Committee on School Issues. This one meets the first Monday of every month at a noontime meeting. Member Welton is already on that committee and quite enjoys it. Is there anybody else who would like to be put on this committee who has the time? Member Lacey?
I can.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else? Member Larson?
I'll stay the alternate. That would be fine with me.
Okay, so the alternate on the committee. Okay. Member Rutherford and Member Welton, it sounds like, with Member Larson as the alternate. Yes.
We could have one more person on the policy committee, and I would open it up that, you know, if somebody else wishes to be there, that would be okay.
Okay, so we don't, right now it's Member Welton and Member Lacey on the policy committee, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is anybody else interested in sitting on that policy committee? Right now they're meeting once a month to go through the school board policies.
When do they meet?
Member Welton, I think the next meeting is in February.
I mean, is it like the third Tuesday of month?
We try to work around everybody else's schedule. This next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday the 26th at 5 p.m.
I'd be interested in being the third member, but I wouldn't be able to attend that meeting. I'll be out of state. But it meets here at Central Office?
Yeah.
Where is it? Meets at
Matsu Central.
Okay.
All right. So we will add Member Larson as a second for that. I'm sorry, as an alternate for that school board policy committee. All right. I think we have all of our seated committees right now filled. So let's move on. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess we need to vote, huh?
What about the charter school liaisons positions? Are we not doing those?
We decided that we wouldn't appoint that committee, that as a standing committee, but then if we needed to have somebody be a liaison with certain charter schools to help them work through issues, we would appoint or have a volunteer do that. Yes, Mr. Lacey.
I'd like to volunteer for Twinley Bridge and Midnight Sun.
Okay, so if those charter schools would like a school board member, we'll forward your name to them. All right, thank you. Mr. Cordero, do you have any comments, any suggestions?
No, I'm ready to call the question.
Okay, we have kind of a delay. We hear Mr. Cordero before we see him talking, so it's a little bit disjointed. All right, so I'm sorry, Mr. Larson.
The Activities Task Force or Committee, if we're not going to have that, can we strike that off totally? Or are we going to have that committee? I don't believe it's active and hasn't been for a year.
We can take that off our list of committees. I think this list you see before you is just a list of committees we have had in the past. There's no members assigned to that, so we won't be having those committee meetings unless there is a reason to call for that committee again.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Member Rutherford.
None of the other, since there are no other names listed here, none of the other charter schools have currently have a school board member assigned or have asked. Is that right?
That is correct. We used to divvy up the school board, the charter schools, and assign a school board member. Very rarely was a school board member, you know, invited to the meetings or approached with any kind of problems. So we don't have that committee assigned right now. Rest assured, if a charter school did want and suggested a school board member to be on there, assigned to them, we would certainly do that.
Okay. So would you like us to volunteer if there's one that would be convenient for us, that if they want someone, we'd be willing?
Sure. You're certainly welcome to do that if you would like.
Because I'd be interested in being a liaison for Birch Street if they want one.
Okay. We'll put your name next to that, and if they show interest in that, that would be fine. All right. So let's vote. Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Chisholm.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Cordero.
Yes.
And I too vote yes. So we have our committees. Let's see. Next thing up is non-action items, and I guess that's me. Our non-action item is a discussion item for legislative priorities and capital requests. Is this where you would like me to give my report when we went down to the Capitol, or would you like to discuss some of the legislative bills that are out there? What would people like? Oh, we have, I'm sorry, they have the books that have our legislative priorities. If you remember right in December, we did a presentation to our legislators, presented them with our legislative priorities. We also talked with the borough and presented those to them. If you look at your book under tab four is the legislative priorities that we discussed at our December meeting and presented to our representatives and senators down in Juneau. So if you just want to take a minute to look at that, and I'll find it in my folder too, and we'll talk about that. All right, so if you look, first thing on our legislative priorities, the first item was education funding, and our request was to increase the BSA with a multi-year plan. This is what Member Larson was speaking about. An increase to BSA is the only way we have of knowing that we're going to have that money from year to year. We usually wait or would like to hire our teachers when we know we're going to get funding from year to year to year instead of as a one-time money or a lump sum. So we were in Juneau. There is a bill, I believe, I'm not quite sure what House bill it is. It was put forward by the minority when we were down there in Juneau. All other school districts, all other school district board members, as well as us from MATSU, heard from the legislature that there is no chance of this bill getting legs and going through. Nobody agreed that this was a good idea. They did not want to put money in the base. So I don't think that is
a real big possibility. Our second one was to increase correspondence student funding to 100%. I don't believe there's a bill yet for that, but we did talk to our legislators about that. We did point out that we have a building. We're mostly in MATSU. We're not statewide, so we do have students in our building. Those students also go out and participate in our schools. So it's not like they're just at home and not participating in our school district. So we did talk about that, and that was received with some thought, and it may happen. The next one was the transportation percentage increase. I think that's not a bill yet, is it? But from what we understand, there's going to be some people putting that forward, and we are really hoping that that will go through. So we're hoping for that to correct SB 182 back to reimbursement of the actual cost instead of the 1.5 increase per year. Number three was make school districts, upon request of their school board, fiscally independent and only accountable to the state. If you remember when we presented this to the borough in December, they didn't seem very happy about that. But we have been upfront about our wish to keep our year-end monies and not have them take half of that. For a budgeting, we can't budget if we don't have a reserve, and if they're taking our reserve, it's just not good fiscal policy to go year to year. So that was our third. That sounds like there will be a bill, hopefully. Or is it in Representative Feige's? I'm sorry, I'm looking at Luke. Okay. It is in a bill presented by Representative Feige, who I believe has one school in our district, so thank you to him. So we're looking forward to that going forward. The fourth one was multi-year funding. If multi-year funding is not an option, or number one, you know, increase the BSA and tell us what we're going to have happen, to provide some tools that will assist the districts with managing the year-to-year or pay-as-you-go, which is what we're under right now, funding structure. And there's a few under here. Alter the fund balance statute to not allow any additional requirements, restrictions, or capture of school district fund balance by municipalities governing the school districts. Again, Representative Feige has one that addresses this. And I believe they're rewording it so it's a little more clear. It went to a committee, and some of the people on the education committee didn't understand the wording, so I think they're rewording that and making it more clear. Item B was funding based on prior year count with a mechanism to fund growing populations. This is included in Representative Feige's bill. So that is something that's before the education committee now. Item C was to fix the provisions related to reduction in force to be more flexible by changing the date of notification and eliminating criteria for the RIF. The two criteria for this reduction in force that would be removed, and it lists the AS 4.20.177, school attendance in the district has to decrease. So really what they're saying to us is if we have a reduction in force, it only can come from school students decreasing, and we know in our district our student population isn't decreasing, just our money's decreasing. And then the basic need of the school district decreases by 3% or more from the previous year. Again, that's not happening in our school district. We just don't have the funds. So those were our legislative priorities. We talked to most of our legislators. Right now there's not, actually we talked to all of our legislators, and we're really received well. It was a big difference down there this year from when I've gone down in previous years. The MATSU is, we've done a good job at promoting ourselves, where in the past we didn't really well. People, you know, thought the MATSU didn't understand all the innovation we were doing out here in the valley. So now when we go down to Juneau, our legislators are very proud to be from the MATSU and to see the MATSU school district because we are a leader in the state. So our representatives really received us well, were very nice, happy to have us. We got to see everybody. Nobody refused to see us, which is a change also from the past. So I think we did pretty well. We talked about our capital requests, which also we have on our legislative priorities, and we went over those in December. Alaska Middle College, we have a two-year request. And this would come out of the governor's, I'm sorry, this would come out of the, which budget? Capital budget? Okay. So come out of the capital budget, and it's for $750,000 that we're asking for 2 years to keep MATSU Middle College. Air Force, JROTC, also $750,000. But we may see funding from the feds on that one also, or instead. Preschool programs, we're asking for $500,000. That one was met with more enthusiasm than I thought it would, and so that might be something that also goes in there. Our STEM initiative, $750,000. Cyber centers, another $500,000, and co-location of education and mental health services at the MATSU Day School. If you remember when we were talking about building the MATSU Day School and we saw the plans, there was some talk about adding some square footage to put offices in for services so people can come and do services at the school. So we also put in a request for that. Are there any comments, Mr. Larson?
Going back to number one, what I was talking about, since the BSA was going to be flat, and 85% of our budget's personnel, is that correct? Or 80, how much? About 85? What I was, and maybe we could put it in next year if we can't get it in this year, the 15% non-personnel money request that get a an increase based on the Anchorage cost of living increase, and to show the legislators if that does not increase, that's X amount of money that comes out of the operation, which generally goes back to personnel, you know, loss of personnel. I just don't want, you know, purchasing paper because it's got higher or purchasing desks because it's got higher costing us to lose teachers behind it or us not being able to purchase those items that are necessary in the school. At 15%, it would be boiler parts or whatever. That's what I was talking about, that should always have a cost increase because those products and those commodities are increasing from year to year. Thank you.
Member Lacey.
Yes. Suppose we don't get $750,000 for the Alaska Middle College. What happens to it?
Go ahead, Dr. Perumo.
You may have noticed in the budget presentation, if we don't receive continued monies, we would have to alter those programs, and they might just be smaller. Some of them might go away, but we are looking for alternate revenue sources. This was the primary year where the costs were the greatest, and so if we can increase the student count there, and we also are in conversation right now with Anchorage to allow for Anchorage students to attend. We are looking for other money sources. But in the budget, you may have noticed that some of our assumptions were that these would be funded. If not, those programs might be altered or done in a different manner.
Through the president, why can't we move this program out to MATSU College? Why do we, and how much do we spend on busing to get children into Eagle River?
Member Lacey, that was a question from a number of people on the House Education Committee, and I think they will be speaking with the university system on that. Right now, though, we are at Eagle River campus, and we have invested some money on remodeling and getting things together at Eagle River.
We are in talks with our university here, Matsu College, and they weren't ready for the program, perhaps. The president is very supportive of it, Dr. Talis Kohlberg. We have engaged in a five-year plan to perhaps build up the middle college in Eagle River to then move our kids. We're going to show them the success of the program and that it actually is beneficial to their school, and it came down to a faculty vote specifically, but we can get you the numbers for transportation and breakdown of costs in the Board Connect, but this program was a grant, and consequently, interestingly enough, our legislators last year gave us capital money for staffing, which never happened in the past. So they are very supportive and support those two teachers out there financially.
Madam President?
Member Cordero?
I just wanted to add a few comments, too. Member Lacey asked the million-dollar question about the Matsu Coalition. Every single person that I've talked to, whether in Matsu, parents, teachers, even students, or lawmakers, they've all asked the same question, and they hope that eventually the Matsu College will be housing those projects. In regards to the fund balance issue and the pupil transportation and the dates, I think that most school districts, when they testified at the open meeting of the Education Committee, they all supported this. But I believe that the Matsu Borough Mayor spoke not very favorable about allowing school districts to keep their balance. And I believe Fairbanks is in a very similar position as the Matsu School District, because they're not even allowed to keep a balance. At least we get to keep 50%. And so I think that there will be a little more opposition, too, from the boroughs next time that they present that bill. Anyway, thanks.
Thank you, Member Cordero. Member Larson.
Getting back to Alaska Middle College, my understanding from what you said and what I've known, Superintendent Promo, was there was a, we were setting this up, and the request did go to our local college, but there was a faculty vote of no at that time. Is that correct? And so we made a five-year commitment with Eagle River to do that because they said yes. Is that pretty simple terms on how that worked?
Through the president, the faculty senate is absolutely correct. Our memorandum of agreement with UAA Eagle River is year-to-year memorandum. However, okay. I've personally spoken with President Gamble in regard, spent a lot of time with him. I rode on the plane with him to Juneau and then went to a Forecor board meeting, and he's highly supportive and says he will work with us. He's impressed with the program. They actually did a public service announcement about that program to the whole university system, and so he does support and will support that program being moved out to Matsu, but because of the capital investment, and it takes a while for the program to work because you can't have too many kids the first year, so you build it up about 40 to 50 a year, and then they move out to the college system and you take new. It would take us about 3 years to 4 years to build, to have the capacity. But we don't want to leave that campus kind of not functional, because they have been an excellent partner, absolutely excellent. So that's why we're inviting Anchorage to possibly backfill those students as we move them to Matsu.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say. Since Matsu has started this and gotten a foothold, that Anchorage would then backfill that and see the necessity for it and maybe look at other universities to do the same thing. Thank you.
All right. I just have one thing to say that I'm not quite sure all school board members are aware of. In the governor's budget, he did include $5.9 million for technology. That technology would be, that money would be funneled through AASB and their program that they already have for the one-to-one technology initiative. It really turns out to be about 3.9 to go to buy devices for schools. It's not very much the first year. The next year it would be that startup plus another 3.9. It's pretty sketchy. The information available is pretty sketchy. We're not quite sure how the whole program's going to work, but that is out there, and it was supported by AASB getting some technology into our schools.
I'm really confused. What is it? What technology are we talking about?
That's what's sketchy.
Okay.
We're not quite sure what
All
technology.
Right.
I heard a couple of different answers to that question. The AASB person said it would be iPads. The AASB, Carl Rose, the CEO, if you will, of AASB, said that it could be on any platform. So it's kind of sketchy. We don't know if we'd be included in the first year, the second year, the third year. There's not very many details. Just know that there is some money out there, and if it goes through in the governor's budget, of course we will be applying for some of those funds.
You would have to apply like a grant then, I assume. Is that correct?
It would be like the grant that they have run previously.
Okay.
Matsu never received funds from those, so.
Yeah, and I don't assume we're going to see funds from this again.
Well, we'll do our best. Member Lacey.
Yes, Madam President. Just a second ago, we could not hear Member Cordero down in Juneau. Is there some way that we could boost the system or put speakers in here so we could hear what he has to say? Because we couldn't hear anything on the side. So
we can work with our technology IT guy and see what we can do about it. There is quite a delay. Any other comments or questions on this item? I don't think I have anything more to depart to you. All right, so we'll move down to future items, future business. We have a meeting on February 20th, a regular school board meeting here at the Matsu Central office. We also have a meeting, policy committee meeting is on the 26th at Matsu Central School at 5 p.m., so it starts kind of early, Matsu Central School at 5. March 6th, we also have another regular school board meeting here at the central office. Is there any other business or anything that people would request we discuss at these meetings, anything you want added to the agendas?
Madam President, I would like to announce that on March 6th, our next student and staff awards will be presented. So that meeting we would request begin at 5 o'clock.
All right, that will be noted. We are, if there's no more meetings, no more comments on that, okay, we are to persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I don't see anybody new here who didn't hear the long set of rules in the first persons to be heard on non-agenda items. So this is your second chance to speak and be heard on non-agenda items. Okay, so nobody has any comments they would like to make to the school board on non-agenda items. That moves us down to correspondence and board committee reports. Member Welton, can you present for our last meeting?
For the policy meeting. Well, you passed the policies under consent agenda. We are going to be working on the next series, which is the 2000 series, for the next meeting, and any that were pulled from the first set, and I think you had that information in the memo. It was a great meeting. Enjoyed having us work very diligently to get things done. Thank you. That's all I have on that committee.
Member Rutherford, you filled in for the joint committee. Would you like to make a report on that from Monday?
It was partly a update on the bond projects, and I did want to say that we did address, we did talk about that wood-fired boiler issue at that meeting, so those details I'm sure will be included in Dr. Promo's report about that. No, I appreciated the informal setting to be able to talk with the assembly members about common goals and issues.
All right, were there any other correspondence or board committee reports? Member Welton?
Correspondence. I did receive information on the wood boilers, and that's one of the impetus to bring it to the committee. And Mr. Lacey, that information will get to you through the superintendent, but there was quite a bit of information that came out from that. Thank you.
All right. So we'll move on to comments from the school board and administration. Dr. Paramo, do you want to start?
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to let you know there's been lots of action this past week and weekend in the Matsu Borough, both in clubs academically and co-curriculars. Wasilla High School sponsored last weekend Senora Stevie, the foreign language competition. It was great fun. It was held at Wasilla High School. The same time, Battle of the Books was going on with 3rd, 4th, 3, 4, and 5, 6th graders, I believe, at Sherrod. Please know, too, that state wrestling finished up last weekend. It was held at Bartlett, and the top five teams in the state that are 4A schools, and remind you, all Anchorage schools are 4A, the large Fairbanks schools, Juneau Douglas, Thunder Mountain. I just want to name quite a few, but your Matsu schools for wrestling, Wasilla High School took second, Palmer High School took third in the state, and Colony High School took fifth. So we certainly have excellent little builder wrestling programs, and they carry right through to the high school. So we are quite proud of those folks and those men and women. And this weekend, to look forward, something that we are bringing to our community, and again, we like to mention this in regard to when schools go out to bid. Mr. McPhail works with different schools to bid at ASA, or the State Athletic Association, to bring the statewide competitions to our valley. And with the completion of the football fields, we hope to host football state, but we did host volleyball for state in the fall, and we are now hosting at the Menard Center in Wasilla. The city of Wasilla is assisting state hockey tournament, and so one team from Matsu made it to the 4A championship, and that is Wasilla High, and they have a game at 7:30 tomorrow evening. But we just want to note that we love it when our hotels and food, restaurants, things fill up, and it's something that schools can give back to the community, because our community supported us through our school bonds and the like, and really businesses are always tapped by children to help support teams, whether they be in academics or athletics, and we are very appreciative that we have such a giving community, and I hope folks that come from around the state enjoy a little bit of Matsu.
Member Larson.
Thank you. I really enjoy the board connect and the bill round that we get that discusses each bill, and I'm happy that we have two ex school board members down there, because we talked about different mandates from state and federal government that were not paid, and I'm sure they're looking for our best interest if any of these bills are passed through that would cost any school district, that you know, the funds would be there also for that. Very interesting bills, and I really enjoy following it, and I really appreciate the board connect as well as the other information that comes through on these. I'm trying not to get too hyper on the bills, because they're right at the stage But they're fun to watch, and I appreciate that information. And I thank Mr. Luke there for a great presentation on the budget and trying times ahead. I hope you're ready for it. Thank you.
Mr. Cheatham.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for this meeting and for the privilege of being here and working on these challenges. I think we maybe dodged a bullet in the assembly meeting last night because the process of how we select these schools, if it's not done right and if we're not bringing in the public participation, it's going to make it more difficult in the future to get the next bond. And so I think we're really lucky with that. And I also want to just appreciate the two classes that we just voted on. They were for the school, and it's really a part of the value added that the district is service that the district is adding to parents who are homeschooling. Because if especially one of them especially the outcomes were specifically tied to state objectives and they were specifically written to encourage higher level reasoning skills and thinking. And if we continue to have that that little bit more control on the classes, and if we continue to give that support so the parent can look at this course description and get a good sense of how to guide their son or daughter to that, I think we're really adding something to that homeschool experience, and it's really good. So thank you all, and I look forward to continuing on with you all.
Member Cordero.
I apologize if you didn't hear me before. We used three different technologies to be able for me to see you and for you to see me and for me to hear you. So we use my cell phone to do the audio conference, and then I use GoToMeeting for you guys to see me, and then we use a live stream service for me to be able to see you. Eventually, we'll only be using one service to do all three, but for now, this is working out. So I apologize if you didn't hear me before, so I'm putting the phone next to me. It was really amazing to see the Matsu folks come to Juneau. Dr. Palamo, Luke, and President Pauger came, and it was great to catch up. And being here, one would think that I wouldn't get a chance to actually talk to our Matsu constituents and students and parents. Actually, I probably talked to more Matsu folks here than when I was commuting back and forth from Anchorage. I've got a chance to meet with the students from Twin Ridge and the Colony Middle and Colony High, some of the teams that came over, and so Wasilla teams, and a lot of teachers, and just people that come and visit. I have heard, and I will follow up to Dr. Ferrambo, some comments in regards to the roof at Big Lake, and there are still some concerns about some of those maintenance issues that are happening on Big Lake, and so I will bring that up later. I forgot to mention it earlier to her. But I will give her a call tomorrow and follow up with that. But otherwise, David, welcome to the school board. And Mr. Forrest, you will be missed, and I appreciate that you made board members like me understand the budget process and understand the financial terms and how that funding works for the Matsu and other school districts. So thank you, and good luck with your new adventure.
Thank you, Member Cordero. We did hear you much better. Thanks. Member Welton.
Thank you. I was at the Student Advisory Board meeting this morning, and I sat in on the Policy Board looking at some resolutions they wanted to bring forward. I think you will be interested in when they get polished and presented. They're great ideas, and talking about future ways to work with our students, I think it'll be great. I also visited Makatans Elementary, and I had a personal tour by the principal, and I did appreciate his time to walk me through many of the classrooms. And one of the things that was happening in one of the STEM classes was they were looking at weather issues, and they had, there was many paragraphs written on poster board, and the students were to summarize the information, and they told me how to summarize and the ways and methods that they have learned to summarize. I wish my college students knew this. It really is fantastic, the kinds of work that they're doing, and the students were well prepared and were able to, they had confidence in who they were by being able to speak out and things like this. I was really pleased with that. I also went to the Thielen Evening of Excellence and enjoyed hearing the jazz band, the middle school jazz band. If you haven't heard it, you need to go and hear them. They're fantastic. And it was great. The place was packed. Parents were there. It's always great to see, celebrate our kids and our students' achievements and to have parents there for it. Also was at the Battle of the Books, and it didn't have a very big part, just welcomed people and gave out pencils, but I enjoyed that. And it's always fun to see kids who are excited about reading. Something that I didn't mention, I'd like to, I know that we're looking at where the data of where students are after college. I'd like to know something about the number of scholarships that our students receive, and the number as well as the monetary amount. I think that that's another way to show that our students are doing well. And yes, the jobs are important too, and the kinds of work and the kinds of activities they're doing. But I think also to recognize that they win awards, those awards can be hundreds of thousands of dollars for their college education. And I think that we need to note that to let the public know. And welcome, David, and I hope that we will collaborate on a lot of great things for this school district. And I wish to say thank you, Mr. Forrest. It's been a pleasure to know you, and we will miss you.
Member Rutherford? Thank you. I also went to Battle of the Books, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was my first time watching the district competition, and those questions were tough, and those kids did so well. I also accompanied Neil. I'll let him talk more about it, but we visited three schools, and Trapper Creek Elementary, Talkeetna Elementary, and Sioux Valley. And I appreciated each principal took a good 45 minutes to talk with us, to show us around. We got to talk to a few of the kids, and we made a report, but there were some highlights, and one of them, I really would like to have a meeting at Trapper Creek. I just think that Sioux Valley is beautiful and flashy, but I think that the little older schools are where we need to go, and the community needs to see us in those little older schools. Talkeetna, I've never seen so much student prepared art in such a small school as that school. It's just beautiful. Sioux Valley, that's for such a wide range of students they have there, age-wise. They really step up to the plate and have a really first-rate school out there. Last but not least, I personally was very proud of Mr. McPhail and his article in the paper and his participation in the Valley Men Choose Respect campaign. I think that kudos to him, and I think it reflected really well on us as his employer. Thanks.
Member Lacey. Yes, first off, I'd like to tell everybody about something that's been bugging me since yesterday at about 11:45. I was parked at the Seward Meridian and PW Highway, and a first student special ed bus is sitting on an MTR wrecker. What is so fantastic about this to me is the fact that the right duals were about to fall off the vehicle. I complained about this last year. I'm worried about the transportation that my daughter rides one of these buses. But it's not about my daughter. It's about every kid. I'm concerned that the maintenance is not being done on these, especially the little buses. Some of you will say, oh, we got a whole bunch of new buses. Yes, but if you don't maintenance those buses, those aren't going to last either. I have some serious concerns about this. The wheels that fall off seem to be the small buses. That tells me somebody doesn't own a torque wrench. Now, on the plus side, does anybody in this room besides Mr. Verbal know what our largest school is these days? It's Mat-Su Central School with over 1,500 children in it. I would like to see us, maybe, I was told at our little jaunt up the valley that there's a lot of homeschooling parents in the Talkeetna area and in the eastern part of the Mat-Su Borough. I'd like to see if we can investigate putting a body in Sioux Valley to get back some of those homeschooling students that are up there. At 1,500 students, that's quite an impressive number. Anyway, thank you.
Kendra.
No comment.
Okay, that leaves me, and I just want to say again what a pleasure it was to go to Juneau and be from the most respected school district in the state. People ask a lot of questions. People were happy to see us. Other school districts wanted to know what we were doing and heard that we were doing things well. So it was wonderful, and I want to thank the staff for working on that. I also want to thank Luke for going with me and being the numbers guy and being supportive when I went into all the offices. So it was a good visit. We are the best school district in the state, and we will continue to get better. Thank you.
Madam President, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Second.